Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, in case you didn't know, this week is Elvis Week, where fans commemorate the passing of the King. Now, the traditional narrative has been that his manager, Colonel Tom Parker, was a Machiavellian character, but a new book claims this wasn't the case at all. Peter Goralnik is the author of The Colonel and the King. Peter, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Where did Elvis Colonel Tom Parker, where did they first meet each other?
Well, Colonel sought him out when Elvis started making a name for himself in the Mid-South. And he saw him on a Louisiana hayride in January, and he fell head over heels. I don't want to say in love. He saw in Elvis the potential to be the greatest entertainer he'd ever seen. And since Colonel believed only in the wonderful world of entertainment, this was something truly notable for him.
And at the time, would it be fair to say that Tom Parker was unique in recognizing that in Elvis?
He was absolutely unique. I mean, everywhere he was at the top of the country music game. He was at the top of the entertainment game. He was the foremost manager in the business. He was managing the number one country singer in the country, Hank Snow, and had just finished 10 years with Eddie Arnold, who was a superstar that country music had never seen. But when he went to other people, when he went to other promoters, other booking agents, none of them saw that potential. They said, we'll come back in a couple of years. So Colonel basically gambled all of his name, all of his reputation, everything he had on this young, unknown. He was definitely a regional star, but somebody who was unknown, untested, and unproven. And by the end of the year, he had signed Elvis up, and as his only client, his only artist, which is how he always referred to him, and had gotten him signed to RCA Victor.
And did he have a long-term plan for Elvis? In that, you know, we'll release X amount of albums, then maybe we'll move you into movies, you know, that kind of thing.
No, it was just a plan of vast ambition, which both he and Elvis shared. I mean, there was no limit to it. Each of them saw a future that couldn't be mapped because it hadn't been arrived at. And from the beginning, the intention, I mean, from his very first letters, I should say that this book is based entirely on his letters, on his correspondence, on the business records, and on my 10-year acquaintance with him. But the main thing, really, are the records. And from the very beginning, in his very first letters to outsiders like the William Morris Agency, who became instrumental in Elvis' success, the idea, and Elvis's idea, was to build him up as an actor in the mode of James Dean, of Marlon Brando, which is articulated in the letters in late 1955.
Mm. And did he think that was working when those movies started to come out?
I think for the first, before Elvis went into the Army, when Elvis made Love Me Tender in 1956, he had never been in anything as much as a high school play, and you can watch him on screen, and it's almost as if he's memorized the entire script, and you can see he's waiting for the other actor to deliver his or her line so he can deliver his. By the time he made King Creole, I'd say he was an actor. His ambition was to be an actor in, let's say, the Stanislavski mode. This was somebody, I don't think he read books about it, but this was a method with which he was very familiar. It was he wanted to be in the moment. He wanted to call upon his own experiences and memories. And you can see him. He is a, you know, legitimate actor in King Creole, but each of the movies he becomes better in. But the one other thing I should emphasize is Colonel Parker had absolutely nothing to do with any of Elvis's artistic decisions. He never was in the recording studio with him. He suggested one song in their entire 20-year career career together. He made no attempt to influence Elvis. He believed in his artist, and at every attempt, whether it was from RCA or it was with the William Morris Agency or it was television or it was the movies, every attempt to force Elvis into a slot is met with, and this is in the correspondence, is met with Colonel's reply, my artist knows, I believe in my artist knows his business, and complete support for Elvis's artistic decisions.
Yeah. So by the same token, I suppose, because one criticism of Elvis's film work was perhaps he did too much of them and maybe wasn't picky enough about his scripts. So by the same token, then the colonel wouldn't be saying, no, don't pick that one.
No, I mean, that's a much more complicated issue, and I think, you know, like so many people, Elvis may have been undone by success. And the success was Blue Hawaii in 1961, and it was such an overwhelming success, it's really set the template for the movies to come. There are just so many factors in this thing, but I think that one of the elements that people often overlook is that during the time that Elvis was making these movies in 1960, 61, 62, 63, he was making some of the greatest, the most ambitious, and the most beautiful music of his career, which, again, I emphasize, had nothing whatsoever to do with his manager, except for the fact that Colonel supported him in that. And he transformed himself, Elvis did, in those years after he got out of the Army, into a interpreter of song, into somebody who was doing something. This is not to put down anything he had done before, but he had vast ambitions. And I think if anyone is, you know, were to listen, or anyone who does listen to the music he made during that period, will hear see and hear an artistic growth that is really astonishing.
Yeah. I suppose something that's of much debate among Elvis fans is an overseas tour, a massive international tour, had been mooted. It never seemed to happen. Why did it never happen?
Well, again, how much time do you have? there was much talk of an overseas tour before Elvis went into the Army. There's a lot of correspondence about it. Colonel was trying to set an Australian tour, which would have been the harbinger of an overseas tour, with one of his proteges, Lee Gordon, who was a very interesting character himself, who was based in Australia. He seems to have had no holdback about the idea of going overseas. He went to Canada, which is the one time that Elvis went out of the country, but until 1960. After that, I think everything changed. You didn't have ICE agents in this country after that, but the whole matter of documentation became a much more serious thing. But Elvis did not tour at all in the 60s. In the 70s, it was talked about considerably. His going to Europe or his going to Japan, in the end, and this isn't to put the blame on anybody, but in the end, Tom Hewlett, who was really Elvis's chief lieutenant, who was the person most experienced in contemporary tours and was a partner in Concerts West, which did the tours of Jimi Hendrix, really pioneered in the rock tours. He took a group to Japan, and I think the Moody Blues, and came back from Japan, and all of the guys around Elvis, all of the people around Elvis, wanted to hear about the tour. All of them wanted to go overseas. All of them wanted to go to Europe. They were very excited. They said, Elvis wants to talk to you. Tom Hewlett went up. Tom Hewlett was a very competent, upstanding, just a very knowledgeable person. He went up to talk to Elvis in his suite, and Elvis spoke to him about what was curious about the tour. He was curious about it, had no interest whatsoever in going himself. And Tom Hewlett's view, and I think Colonel's view, which was only said metaphorically, Colonel said, we can't get the security overseas. But what it came down to was that Elvis had a problem, and I don't think I'm revealing any secrets here, his dependency on prescribed medication. Nobody could imagine him going overseas without that, and nobody could imagine who was going to carry the medication. So I think in the end, and I should mention one other thing. Europe was something that all the guys around Elvis wanted to go to. They all wanted to go to Europe. Forget about touring. And they thought they had persuaded Elvis to go, but Elvis's wife, Priscilla, when I spoke to her, said, you know, Elvis was so enthusiastic with the guys, and when he got behind closed doors and we talked about it, he had zero interest.
Yeah.
And he loved his life here. And, I can't tell you why, but that's, I would say his motivation was
they must
not
have been,
strong.
Yeah, major factors. Peter, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Peter Goralnik there, author of The Colonel and the King, Tom Parker, Elvis Presley, and the partnership that rocked the world.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.